Welcome to this episode of the Strong Kind Podcast. This episode is with Dr. Katie Dabrowski. Katie is a doctor of physical therapy. She is one of the founders of Old Bull Athletics in Miami, Florida. She's a very fitness-forward physical therapist. She's also had just a really cool journey to being part of Old Bull Athletics. And she's just a really kind and cool human. We talked about training. We talked about being a rehab pro. And we talked about influences and all sorts of stuff. It was a great conversation. I really appreciate Katie coming on. You can find her at KT Dabrowski on Instagram, or you can look up Old Bull Athletics and you should be able to find her there. Appreciate you being here. Thanks so much. Hope you enjoy this conversation. So Katie, I have followed you. I don't know why, but Old Bull Athletics. When did you like? I think I know your origin story, which is creepy because it's like, why do I know your origin story, right? But like, basically, a friend was starting a gym. You would become you were a new grad, and
yeah.
You were like, and they were like, you want to come do physio out of this gym. Is that kind of the overall
story? More or less that works. Yeah. I just knew I never wanted to be in a traditional clinic. And I started my own cash practice like as soon as I graduated at a gym that I was a trainer at. And it was great. I really liked it. And then I met my current business partner now, the person who founded Old Bull. We just realized we were super aligned. So I joined the team with him and we became partners, and two locations later, the rest is history.
So there's a lot of awesome things there. What gave you the audacity to be like, because I went to PT school because I wanted to start like a gym, right? I'm like,
yeah.
I was a CrossFit coach. I was a personal trainer. Looking back, I was like, man, where you need a lot of work to get good at those things. But I kind of looked at like physio. I also had like seen Kelly Starrett and like, you know, I'd been exposed to some different things. And I also just saw that like there was like good gyms where people were coming, and then there was like gyms that were just like burning people out, which is common in the industry. But like, what gave you the audacity to be like, I'm going to start a cash practice right out of school. And then we'll talk more about like Old Bull and what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
What gave you the audacity there?
I don't even know. I think just being like young and like, this is just has to work.
Yeah. Like,
I think I actually was in the research world before I decided to go back to school and go to PT school. So I didn't even have this idea in my head of like, oh, I want to own a gym. I want to do my own practice. It just became very evident when I was in school and what I was exposed to. I was like, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't want to be in these really busy settings. And this is so not what I picture my life being. And I was a trainer during PT school. And I was kind of like, okay, well, worst case scenario, I can pay rent off of my training clients.
Yeah.
So like, I can do that. It's fine. And I just decided, why not do this? And I kind of really truthfully did have that mindset of like, this just has to work because I'm not accepting a job. It just is what it is. Like, I'm not saying yes to any of these places that I did rotations at that are offering me. I don't want to do that. So it literally just has to work. And I think that's really important. Like, I didn't start it as a side hustle and then hope maybe one day it would become a thing. It was just like, no, if this doesn't work, I can't pay my bills. So that ignited a fire.
Yeah, I think so. One of my oldest brother is he's a contractor. He's an excavation contractor. And like, he, you know, I was, it's too easy if your plan B is too easy, right? Like, I got to the point where when I did go all in, like, I realized that, like, it couldn't be just a part-time gig. Like, I do think you can kind of teeter-totter your way up, but
it's probably more like responsible.
Yeah. It's, I think it's kind of depends on like your stage in life, right? Like, if you're a father of three kids, like, you probably are going to be grinding your butt off for a little while.
Yeah.
To like figure out how to build a, you know, I also think being a trainer before kind of sets you up to have the mindset like, okay, well, I just got to get clients. Like, I
totally
figure out how to do that, right? Whereas a lot of people in the PT world, they're just never exposed to that type of thing. They are
for sure.
competing with other people. They're afraid of charging people money,
Yeah.
which I think is we. I want to talk to you about that a little bit. But yeah, like I think a lot of ways can work, but at some point you have to like go all in. I say it this way: you got to go all in on yourself, and if that
Yeah.
means like you like, I would rather go work at like Costco and build my thing than work in a shitty clinic that I
Totally.
see 20 people. Like at least with Costco, I can like do the job without mentally burning myself out. Where if you're like seeing 20 people at a
1,000%.
time do the job, right? Like not that you're gonna
Yeah.
half-ass your Costco job, right?
No, I know what you mean, though. I also just think like I had the idea in my head, which is, you know, when people are asking me about this stuff, it's a talking point and a moment of encouragement that I give them. Like, worst case scenario, just you get a job. Like, that's what I had in my head. I know no matter what, if this doesn't work or if I needed a supplement income, I could do per diem at the hospital. Am I going to be happy? Absolutely not. But worst case scenario, like our field, we have access to jobs. So I think that was another thought in the back of my head. Like, it's going to work, or I just accept a per diem shift on the weekends while I'm building this. But it's, yeah, it's risky. And yeah, that's, I mean, it's just me. I didn't have a family. I didn't have things to worry about from that perspective. So of course that changes things. But I think if you put approach it with that attitude, like it just kind of has to happen.
Yeah. So I think you nailed a lot of really good points there. And I also think like, so what were you in research with prior to school?
So I was kind of pursuing like the neuroscience PhD research route. And I was really involved in a lot of like traumatic brain injury and spinal cord injury research.
Gotcha.
And so that was like a big fellowship that I was working on for a while, and I loved it and it was amazing. But it was just kind of one of those moments of like, I actually would like to be more involved in like the human outcomes of this stuff versus like hanging out with rats, and seeing like the very, very important, but just like beginning stages of like bench work and not actually helping people. My background in neuroscience, I always kind of thought I was going to be in like the neuro world for PT. But then the more I thought about it, it's really like the neuroscience principles that I love so much for addressing like actual good strength adaptation, the neuromuscular adaptations, nervous system adaptations, and just like everybody. So I still carry that hat with me, but not hanging out with rats and looking at their brain injuries all day. It's a lonely pursuit.
So research and like the actual science, like it is kind of a different breed. Like there's just people who just want to sit in a lab and like do that type of stuff. I am not that type at all.
I found I love science and I love the process of it, but I found what I actually loved the most was the like presenting the literature, writing up the publications. Like, I love that side. I like being a science communicator. And I think that's kind of what I'm doing a lot of now in a roundabout way, where it's like, oh, that's cool. It's a skill that I definitely identified early on that I loved, but I'm doing it in a more human facing way, a way that I'm hopeful is going to move the needle for healthcare. But yeah, I think that's what I really found out I loved. And I was like, I don't really love being on like an electron microscope in the basement by myself.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I found that out.
Yeah. I think I'm glad you found that out too. I think, I think we're so, I don't know if we put on rosy glasses or whatever when we think about these things that we're going to do, or if it's just Hollywood. Like I watched a shit ton of House in like circa 2014, and I'm like, do I want to go to medical school and like be House? And then they're like, then that you go and you work in a hospital and you're like, oh, like
that's not what it is at all. So
I very much am in line with you. I am not like, what I do is I follow smarter people than me that interpret literature very well. And I just say, okay, what is this? Oh, this is, you know, this is progressive overload.
It kind of points back to that time and time again. Yeah,
right.
Agreed.
Like, okay, what are length and partials? Oh, we're still just trying to get a little stronger and, you know.
Yeah.
Right. So it is what it is. But I mean, our field is very much like an intellectual, it can be, where people just get intellectual pissing contests, and I'm just like, how do we
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's important, and as coming from somebody where like research is something that I've done and I'm passionate about, It's definitely like our field is so unique in that we have so many competing variables for like how we actually would take something from the literature and apply it to somebody. And anybody who's trying to follow like a PubMed study to a T, I just don't think is working with people. I think that like you're not taking into consideration the human variability element of what we do and the fact of like not everybody gets as excited about exercise science and progressive overload and physiology as we do. And that's okay. I think it's our job to make our patients get excited about it in some way, but like I don't think you can follow a specific protocol and truly be, 100% evidence-based if you are actually looking at the human in front of you. But yeah, it's like that stuff gets clicks. It's like cool to talk about how much you know about research or talk shit about the person who you know more than. And like that's the cool thing right now. And I just think it's exhausting.
I don't think it's the cool thing. I think it's just what gets either quote unquote glaze or clicks on the in the algorithm is either drama or like that's what it is. We're literally living in a time where we're putting in information the computers are like, what do people respond to? Oh, they respond to getting pissed off at each other, right? Or like, or they just, I made a freaking visualization post utilizing the water boy today and like nothing happened. I was so excited about making that post because I'm
Like,
like,
this is
this,
my best work.
I literally am like, this is gonna get so much traction. And I'm like 20, and I like my, po I don't have a giant account, but like, I'm up there where I'm getting views and I'm growing and like, and sometimes I post just complete garbage and sometimes it's really good. And, but,
Sometimes, like my own training videos with like my front facing camera, and it's like barely, it's like the worst angle that gets something. And then I think I have this like intellectual thought piece, and it
yes.
gets nothing. It's just, I don't understand, but I think if we just keep putting out stuff and continuing to be like authentic, the message gets across.
I'm glad you said that because I think that's the ultimate thing that I think I am attracted to in this day and age is just authenticity. And just telling like, I don't care if you kind of like don't want to say copy, but like I follow like who Angus Bradley is?
Yeah, of course.
Like Angus is just he just kind of puts out like these reels that are like a little bit like they maybe are a little bit shit posting and it's like I like if I do something similar I'm probably not gonna get the same traction that he does because I'm not really a negative guy, not that Angus is a negative guy, right, or anything like that, or like Alec Blennis also, like which I do want to talk about you training with him, but like he's freaking jacked. He's an outlier in the fitness world, right? And so that's what like I really had this change of it's like exceptional people are exceptional, meaning like different breeds are gonna get more attention because like they're psychotic, right? There's nothing
For
wrong with
sure.
them, right? Like
For
I'm
sure. I think
and
you're right, though. Like, I think the common thread with anybody that you mentioned, or even the stuff that I think I'm also attracted to when I'm like consuming content, is just people being real. Like, I hate when it feels scripted. I hate when there's like, wow, you must have really had like your content calendar planned out, and today is Tuesday, so you're talking about this. Like, I really appreciate somebody who is more like stream of consciousness and this inspired them today and they're sharing it with the world instead of they felt compelled to post something to fit a need or to have a certain voice or a certain language. I think that's why people get exhausted with trying to make their own content. Like,
yeah.
I think if you can just be you, if you can have your voice come through, if you can seem relatable and personable, I think that's so much better than trying to curate like the perfect post.
Yeah, 100% with you. I think there's so many variables in that game. I thought that was a pink I thought that was a pink ghost energy pink lemonade, which I really
Oh
want.
my God.
Have you ever had one of those? They're so good.
No, but that would have been hilarious. And I kind of wish I would have just chugged an energy drink right now. But
No, I know. I'm this is
no,
a
it's little bl brand bl placement. I got a bubbly water here.
bubbly. I made a shot of espresso, which I like drinking out of small mugs. But yeah, I think so much of it, and this is kind of tying back into business and just like people, I just hate like really script, like you said, scripted, even like stuffy, like physical, like. I can't believe that people in our day and age are still wearing like polo shirts and khakis as
Blows
like
my mind.
is like a physical. I mean, and I know there's still a lot of people who are like practicing in the Stone Age of like,
For
hey,
sure.
do 60 minutes of manual therapy on you today, and like, God, like, because that was the. So just to go back really quick, and then I want to like segue this into like business and you know how things have gone, and but like I took over at a traditional clinic. I wanted to start my own thing, but my wife or my fiance girlfriend at the time were like, let's just get a couple jobs and we'll start working. We'll figure out where we want to be and we'll make it work. But I took over for a guy who was exclusively manual therapy,
Yeah.
45 to 60 minutes of manual therapy, and I was the exercise guy. I was the
Right. So his patients hated you.
Yeah, my first like 3 weeks was patients not wanting to see me, or patients that had been exclusively lying on a table for 45 minutes, being asked to get up and squat and move,
Yeah.
and they're like, and then my manager, luckily at the time, was like, Dave, like, there's just gonna be people who they're not gonna come to you, and that's okay.
Yeah.
You're over
But they're
time.
not the right fit for you anyway, so it's okay.
Exactly, right? And maybe those people should be my people because they need to get their butts moving anyway.
Yeah.
But he's like, dude, it's just you're just learning, like, you need to be you and practice the way that you're gonna practice. Like, yes, should you incorporate some manual therapy because this is how this clinic runs? Probably, right? But he was very kind in that regard. He's like,
I was
but
gonna say that's actually very cool. I you
he
know
didn't give
that
a
you
shit. He
were
was a great guy.
That's
Like he was
awesome.
like, it was a clinic that used to be private that got bought out, and he was the manager.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell he was looking for a way out too, like in any way. But he's like, just do a good job with the people in front of you and don't worry about the rest of this BS and like all kind of
That's
shit.
perfect.
So, but like, let's talk about business and like the business of healthcare, because even you know, and I've even struggled with this. Sometimes it's like, well, I'm gonna charge people money out of their pockets to do something that they can get with insurance. The how I always differentiate this is like, I'm not doing like the physical therapy that you've ever gotten. We're not doing yellow.
Yeah.
We're not doing yellow TheraBand external rotation for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, my goal is to teach you how to train. My goal is to teach you about your body. My goal is to not necessarily teach you about pain, but help you interpret your pain better, right?
Totally.
So just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think reframing what we think of what our role is very important. And you know, when I talk with this with my team too, because there is a element of selling in the cash-based world, but I reframe it as like, it shouldn't really feel like you're selling anything if you wholeheartedly believe that you are providing an experience that they could never get anywhere else. And I wholeheartedly believe that. Like, I know that nobody is going to be able to walk out of our gym and go somewhere else and get a better experience and get what they need and get like truly, what I think physical therapy is and what I think it has the potential to be is more of like healthcare advocacy, movement literacy, like teaching people about their bodies and making them excited about it. I think there's a lot of misconceptions of like, oh, well, people don't want to do that. They just want to like lay on a table. It's like, well, I think no, it's your job to challenge that and make them want to do what you're offering. I think we have such a responsibility to convey that what we're doing is what's going to help them forever and for the rest of their lives. If you wholeheartedly believe and know that you're going to change somebody's life because of what you're doing with them, then like they can't get that experience with insurance. And I believe that. And it's not saying, and I'm always very careful to say this, it's not saying that insurance-based clinics or PTs are bad. And there's a whole spectrum of like amazing people. I do think there are limitations. And I do think that you're handcuffed a bit more to what you can actually provide. This is not a knock against that. I just think it's an easier way to provide it in a setting where you can blend the worlds a bit more. And I don't have to stop doing certain things at a certain period of time because somebody without a medical degree is telling me. I so wholeheartedly believe and know that what we're doing is changing somebody's life and not just fixing, in quotations, their pain. I'm giving them strategies to be like a more resilient human, and that is what we're doing.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, I obviously vibe with everything you just said. Like, that's why I have people on this podcast, is because it's like, I vibe with them. I'm not really looking to argue with people on my podcast, right? Like, and I do think, you know, it's important to touch on the fact that, like, we're not criticizing, you know, there's a lot of PTs, there's a lot of people in healthcare that, like, they're just going to be inside the system. They didn't want to go and start their own thing. Like, I went to PT school with the intention of starting my own thing. Like, that was why I was going to go get the degree. So I think I was already like, how the how-tos of business, I think you have to figure out by doing them. I do think there's good mentors out there. I do think that there are people who can help you. I also think there's a lot of people who realize that business coaching is often just a giant upsell, right? So it's kind of navigating those fields and but like at the end of the day, our job, well, how I look at it is if you can get outside of the system, and even if you're in the system and you can get somebody to understand and like start to practice just meeting the exercise guidelines, like you've drastically change the trajectory of that person's life. If you can get somebody to realize that like pain is just feedback, like one of my favorite moments as like a coach and PT is like, you have that moment where it's like, so my back's hurting, but I realized that I deadlifted yesterday and the day before that I gardened for 4 hours, right? And it's
Yeah, exactly. And
so
then I like
okay,
sat on a flight
yeah,
and
and
yeah,
yeah, and it's.
totally.
And it's so crazy because I think me and you look at it like, yeah, well, that's just like your body giving you feedback. Like
Yeah.
it needs a different stimulus, right? Maybe
Or
it needs.
like that would bother me too. Like I
Yeah,
wouldn't feel
exactly.
good after that either.
Yeah. Well, and that's like a good thing to talk about. Like pain-free training is such a bullshit thing. Like I strained my calf on Monday playing basketball. I deadlifted yesterday. My back is a little sore today. Like I think this narrative. Because I went through and I like, don't get me wrong, I think Kelly Starrett, cool guy. I would love to have him. He would definitely pass. I don't drink that much, but I would definitely have a beer with Kelly Starrett. But this notion, and I'm not saying he's the biggest proponent of this, but like this notion that you're somehow going to train hard and be physically fit and strong and capable and never get any feedback from your body is such a BS thing. What's
One
your take
thousand
on it?
percent.
What's your
Yeah,
take on it?
yeah.
Why is it so prevalent?
Yeah, I think for a long time, our industry, we prided ourselves on this like need to feel important, and our importance is fixing people's pain. I think for a very, very long time, like I remember in PT school, we were taught that pain was the fifth vital sign. Like we were literally taught that that was the number one most important metric to get from somebody, and the number one most important metric that we fixed or changed. And I think the exact opposite. I think like we're not being flippant and just saying, pain doesn't matter, but the absence of pain isn't the only thing that means you're healthy or not. And I think that people really do think that. Like, people really come in and think that the only way that I'm actually done or I'm better is that I have zero pain ever again. And I think it's our job to teach people exactly as you were saying, what pain is and what it isn't, without giving them like a pain neuroscience lecture that they didn't ask for. But I think it's really important to normalize the experience of like sensation and discomfort and feeling stuff, and that our role is not to fix somebody's pain or take it away. It's to create such a resilient person physiologically and psychologically that the inevitability of pain is not going to freak them out. Or it may, but they have strategies to overcome it. Or they learn that for the rest of their lives, they're going to experience sensations, but they know how to modify their program because of what we've worked on. Like that's what our goal should be. I also think it's important as clinicians and coaches to be vulnerable with our clients and talk about our own pain experiences. I talk about my injury history. I talk about the things that I've dealt with. I talk about when I overtrained myself. I talk about all of that stuff because I think people look at us and think that we never get hurt, think that we're perfect, think that we train perfectly, and think that we have some secret that we need to give them to never have pain again. And that could not be farther from the truth.
You touched on a lot of really good things there. I was gonna put this on like a quote card or something yesterday, or just put it on like Threads. It's like I feel like physical therapists took like, or rehab practitioners took like the awesomeness that was like strength training, and were like, how can we make this suck? Like, how can we make this really lame? Oh, let's make it so that you're doing like, really. Some of the exercises that I've seen like patients be prescribed that are like, what were they trying to have you do? And how was this
If
going?
you can put an exercise on a piece of paper and that's it, that is such a sign to me. Like, if that's what you're giving somebody, if it
Yeah.
can be printed out, then I think we have problems.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
I think so too. It's like so underdosed and underloaded and all of the things that, we try to correct for in what we're doing.
yeah. And it, and you know, going back to a little earlier, you also mentioned that, like, you know, it's not black and white. Like, you know, I have a 90, I, my neighbor and her 90-year-old mother and then the 27-year-old daughter all come and train with me. And, you know, like, none of those three women want to really, like, they do it because I actually just challenge them. Like, I like my neighbor's like, hey, she's just complaining and moans and groans all the time. And I'm like, eh. And she's like, how's my mom's like potentially fall? I'm like, just come lift and we'll see if you like it. And then it's just evolved into like they come twice a week and it's awesome.
That's
But
awesome.
I am constantly modifying what I had written out for the
Yeah.
day to what they are doing that day. Like, I honestly look at like the strength protocols and strength programs that people put out, and I'm like, most of people's biggest problems is they don't know how to modify their program from the day to day
For
while
sure.
still
Yeah.
hitting the intent of the program, right? Even my
That is
coaching,
so perfectly stated. Yes.
right?
Like,
Like
yeah.
that's my even the people that I coach, what I'm trying to do to them to help them understand is like, and this is the utility of reps in reserve and, you know, modifiable variables and giving people flexibility. They just have to understand what that flexibility means, right?
Right.
It's like, no, some days you're gonna feel like absolute shit. And it's also hard because on those days you might have the best performance of your life because that's just purely
Exactly.
how it works. But like you
Exactly.
should just go in with this is what I'm trying to get done. And one of the biggest things that like I think it's been a combination of Alec Blennis and I follow a guy named like Will Ritel and Angus Bradley. And like I just never had thought about it this way. It's like the plateau is where you make progress. Like where it's the gains do not feel like they're coming quickly is where you are actually creating adaptation, right?
For sure.
And that's not fun, right? Like we all get addicted to that 6 weeks of, ooh, that was a fun, you know, I made good progress over that initial 6 weeks. And now it's like, this sucks because I'm just kind of doing the same thing over and over again or slightly similar things, right?
I
But
think that's also part of our job is to like get people excited about that too and think of it like the long game. Because
yeah.
I try to frame it with clients in a way where it's like, okay, when I meet you, starting today, I want you to think of this as an opportunity to stack as many decades as possible of building as much strength, muscle mass, resiliency, all of those things as possible, because it is going to directly relate to your quality of life, independence, and your health span to match your lifespan. So you're not living longer, but sicker and incapable of doing things. The more decades you stack doing that, the more metabolically fit you are, the better tissue quality you have because it's related to muscle mass and how well your body utilizes glucose. Like, there's so many important variables of just starting as soon as you possibly can building muscle that it's like, I want you to get excited about what you may have first have considered the monotony of just normal training instead of it's like, no, I'm making you so resilient and making your muscle mass like dictate how well your body functions. I want that to excite you. Like, I talk about it as now being in my 30s. Like, I can't wait to see what insane stuff I can do in my 40s and my 50s and my 60s. Like, that's how I think now. I'm trying to think of the long game, how many decades I can keep being like confusingly strong. Like, that's
Yeah.
what I'm in this for. And if you show your passion for that as their provider, they're going to get excited too. Like, you're not just the 19-year-old who's jacked because you've never had to even like worry about anything in your life. You have a family, you have like skin in the game. Like, you have stuff that you're trying to be better for too. I think that makes a big difference.
I think like you also just touched on, I mean, those teaching moments of getting people like so. I'm a huge like kind of not like probably your neuroscience like actual lab type of neuroscience, but like I'm into like well I love like Robert Sapolsky. I've ever read
For sure. Oh
Rise,
my
Eat, Don't
gosh.
Get Awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm probably like
Yeah.
a pop culture neuroscience nerd, but I also been I am just a, like I have this right here, The Inner Game of
It's
Tennis,
a great book too. Yeah.
and like and so like, but it's these associations that you can start to get people to reframe. Like the
Yes.
association that aging means weakness is so prevalent, right? But then I even just post a video of my 90-year-old client Loreen deadlifting 75 pounds and people are like, whoa, then there's like the 60-year-olds like, well, I can't deadlift 70 pounds. Well, you got 30 years, so it won't
let's
take
figure
you
it
that
out.
long, right? But like just changing those, and it also requires repetition, but just, hey, okay, like just think about, one of my favorite things to just say to people is like, oh, because everybody falls off, right? I fell off. It's like, well, if you get 2 to 3 sessions in for 50 weeks out of the year, you're at between 100 and 150 sessions a year. Like, and I love to train. Like, it's probably my biggest problem is that I really like to freaking go do shit, right? Which
And we're
I also,
lucky. Like, we have to remember that too. Like, we're so lucky that we're weirdos and we enjoy this. Like, we're so, so lucky. But I think we can harness that passion for good and help with those reframes of like, if we're getting excited about this and we're doing it in a way that's not so intimidating to somebody who's new to this, like, I think that's important too. Like, I don't have the expectation that everybody I work with is going to want to train the way that I want to train and the intensity that I want to train and travel for races and like the stuff that, like, they don't have to be that extreme. But the hope is that you create such like an open and welcoming environment to somebody who maybe has forever felt like they didn't belong in the gym or they didn't belong in an active group of people. If you can be that person for them, like, oh my gosh, you just changed their life. Like, that's what this is all about.
Yeah. So let's talk about what got you into like training in the first place and like what's been your arc and like honestly, where,
Yeah.
how old are you, if you don't mind?
33.
Okay. I'm 36. And it's weird because I arguably feel is better. I'm just a lot less like, I hate to use the word pliable because I hate that fucking word. But like, I just like at 18, it's like I could just go do whatever. And like, I'm not very like powerful. I think I am more strong and powerful now. And that has caused me to like tweak more things than I used to, right? Like,
and you have more life stress. That's what it is too. You
I
have
think
responsibility. And
yes.
like, if we think of the cup being full analogy, like, I'm just busy. I'm so busy. And there's so many competing demands for my body's capacity that,
Yes.
like, training will often be the thing that will tip the scale for that. But I feel significantly better and stronger and fitter and faster and all of these things now than I ever did when I was, like, supposed to be at my peak as, like, a college athlete. I feel way better now. But yeah, it's just like I'm more affected by, oh, I had a really hard caseload today. Or I've been in meetings all day and like it's going to take my body some time to feel ready to train. Whereas before, I was a college rower. So like we had to get up for practice at 4 a.m. I could go to bed at midnight and just wake up the next day and like not even eat food and just go and row for 4 hours. And it's like I would actually die if I did that now. So that feels different. But I mean, I guess in terms of like arc, I loved running and jumping around on things ever since I was a young kid. And I got like weirdly into like gymnastics on my own. Like I would just try stuff. And I remember being like single digit ages and doing pull-ups. Like I was just super into it. And then you get to school and you start doing some of the like your gym class stuff. And I just realized like, oh, I'm a fast runner. Like I didn't even know this. So I got very into running. That was like my first love, I guess, as a young kid. And I did that a lot, like just starting at like middle school, even before then. And then I played lacrosse all growing up as well. I kind of thought that was going to be my sport. And then I got to high school and I heard like there was a rowing team and I was like, what the hell is that? That sounds cool. And I tried out. It was my first time ever trying it and I fell in love with it. I don't know what it was, the mixture of having probably like that genetic predisposition of an aerobic base, I'm sure. And then the like highly technical aspect of it, I loved it. And I became obsessed and I did that all throughout high school and ultimately went to college for it. So that's really like the bulk of my background. I was super lucky that our high school coach was very young. He had just graduated from a very top college program and for rowing. And he started strength training with us twice a week, literally at age 14. And it was good training. Like we were doing all barbell work. And I got so lucky that I was exposed to that. And I fell in love with strength training. So starting at age 14, I was really, really in the weight room a ton. And that just carried through college. When I finished college and I kind of missed being competitive, I got very into running again and ran a lot of races, kept up with my strength training. And I guess that's kind of like perpetuated the in quotations hybrid athlete life that I do now. And I've stuck with that ever since.
Well, it's good to see. I think it's cool to see people's like training arcs, and I also think it's like, it's one of those things like I figured out that at like 15 years old, if I wanted to make the soccer team, I had to go run. Like I had if I wanted to do it, and so I've got at 36 now, it's like 21 years of physical activity, right?
Exactly.
And I enjoy sports, and like there's a lot of people who maybe you don't have this type of arc. But like there's something out there for you, and you're like, I mean, I'm lucky to have a few people who had like never, well, like I actually have a decent amount of people who have never lifted weights before, and like they're falling in love with it
It's so cool.
because it's like you're showing yourself how capable you are, right? And that's like that was what running like taught me is like I just the first time I went and tried to run the 3 miles, like I just literally went and just tried to run the 3 miles that you had to run the 3 mile run in under like 20 minutes or something like that to make varsity squad. And the first time I did it was like 34 minutes. And I'm like, okay. But I got a lot faster, a lot quicker, and then I ended up being like one of the fastest 3 mile runners on the team, right? And but I was really just the feedback loop of okay, I can do this. And then I started to get a little bit of attention for the fact that I was getting faster, right? And that my it was helping me as an athlete. And but it also it helped me, like, I was not the most confident of teenage boys, but it did give me something to be proud of. Unfortunately, the weight room, I just didn't know what the hell I was doing in there.
For
And
sure,
it's
yeah.
like you just you see your buddies who can just start going throwing 135 pounds up and you're like dying under 95, you start to shy away, right? So, but now looking back, it's like, well, a lot of this stuff is just it's just reps. It's just
Yeah.
figuring out why your why, right?
That's what I tell people too, because it's like I'm not. I want to be very clear about that when people maybe like ask questions about, oh, how did you get to this point? It's like, I've been doing this since I was 14. Like, that's almost 20 years. And it's, you don't get strong on accident. You don't get fitter on accident. So, this was stuff that for whatever reason, I was drawn to it from a young age. And I was so lucky to have people in my life who actually knew what they were doing when it came to training. And I had such good exposure. Like, I really did. And in college, too, like, we were really lucky that our strength and conditioning staff was phenomenal. And I learned so much. And I fell in love with it. And I just, it's lucky, but I'm always telling people that like this didn't happen overnight. This is stuff that's the long game, and that's why if you can get excited about this stuff and think now I want to stack years of this, like that's the recipe. That's the only way to do it. But we got lucky that we fell in love with something, and for sure it improved confidence. Like I was always very, very like skinny and gangly and nerdy and weird, and I would not be what I would consider conventionally athletic. Like, I'm not somebody that can run on a field and like have a ton of skill with that. But I found stuff that I was able to be good at. And like, again, rowing is such a brute strength and like pain cave type
I was gonna
sport.
say you fell in love with like one of the most painful things there are
It's
to fall in love with.
horrific. The only good part is that literally everything else in my life has felt easier in comparison. So that's the, but like I was able to find that thing. Would I have maybe felt that way or had as much confidence if I was playing a field sport that like just isn't my skill set? I'm maybe not. I don't know. I just got lucky that I found this thing that I liked.
So, I mean, that brings us to a really good kind of segue to like I'm actually so this is the other book I'm reading. Have you ever read Thinking in Systems by Donnell Ometa?
No, I haven't read that one.
So I mean, complex system thinking, it's again, we shouldn't pain neuroscience our clients, and we shouldn't necessarily complex system our clients, but acknowledging all the inputs that often go unrecognized to then create outputs is often huge, right? And I think
For sure.
it's like all these little subtle things, like even like like Justin Fields, like the quarterback for the Eagles, right? Like there's a video of him like squatting like 500 as an NFL quarterback, which, but like the dude was a powerlifter in high school. His dad was a powerlifting coach, right? So like, yes, he's a gifted athlete, but like the dude has had a lot of exposure to lifting weights, right? And
Totally.
Which is dope, right? And you think about like that, where it's like, you know, we talk about just even like youth specialization, and it's like, hey, are we burning these kids out? Is it worth it? Is the juice worth the squeeze? Or, you know, or we take it into like even just our like clinical practice. It's like, what really matters at the end of the day? You know, is it? And I want to kind of segue. I'm a little tangential here, but you were with Craig. Is it Liebenson or like it's Liebenson?
Liebenson, yeah.
I've been trying. I tried to get him on a podcast, and like I think it just didn't work out. I want to talk to
him. Oh, you got it. Yeah, he's a phenomenal person. Yeah.
He seems really cool. And I do, you know, like even just the segue into like, what the hell is chiropractic care? What the hell is being a physical therapist anymore? And like, I know, I think good rehab is good rehab.
It's the
right?
same. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's something that I'm really proud of at Old Bull, but on our team, we have chiropractors, physical therapists, and athletic trainers, and you would never know which one was which.
Yeah.
We're all just, for us, I even just made a post about it the other day. Like, my system, if I have one, is, does it impact physiology? Does it impact psychology?
Yeah.
That's how I'm driving all of my decision making. And that's where I think if you are in this lane of rehab, it shouldn't matter what letters are after your name.
Yeah. And I think I probably saw that post, and like, that's those are the big things I'm just going back to, are like, how are we affecting, you know, how are we affecting tissue and metabolic conditions, and how are we imposing some level of confidence and resilience, right?
Totally.
Which,
and that should guide us. Like, I think people can take that and be a little bit like nihilist with it and be like, oh, so nothing matters, and go down that like thought spiral. But I think the opposite. I think it gives us endless opportunities to help people, and to also like help with imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
If you can create a session where your training or rehab is between an RPE 6 to 8, and you're making somebody work, you're making them smile, you're making them have fun, you're making them understand their body, you're helping with their program so they can learn how to string all of this stuff together. Like, you've won. That's it. It doesn't matter if it's a tendon or a ligament or a muscle or a disc, or like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really it.
Yeah. It's so much of it is like our tying our ego to what we're doing, and like so much of it, like I rarely worry about specific tissue, other than like acute, when something's very acute and it seems like we need to like kind
right.
of figure out what we're managing here. But like,
it's like, don't be an asshole and be unsafe.
Yeah,
but
exactly. Right?
Otherwise, I tell people that too, where, and you know, there's ways to say it to the general public, right? I'm more of just like, the great news is, because we ruled out this stuff, it actually doesn't matter too much what tissue is involved. Yeah. We're just going to get like the knee feeling a lot better and stronger and able to do what you want it to do. If you can express it that way, I think people will buy in.
Yeah.
Like, the pushback is always like, well, what if somebody wants a diagnosis? It's like, well, yeah, I'm not going to just to prove a point, not tell them something, but I'm going to frame it that way, where like, I've ruled out things that warrant it being super necessary. And we're going to just impact like all of your tissues. And that's what's going to help the most.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like, it's a very good way of saying it. And I think it's just getting over like our conditioning that we want to know the single causal thing. It's like, at a certain level, like, I mean, yeah, like, hey, why do knee joints swell? Because the joint is overloaded. Okay. Like, so
right.
How do we manage this? Well, we decrease the load that seems to be the irritating, and we try to find other ways to load the structure and build capacity. Right. Like,
and that's it. That's over and over,
over
and over.
And
over,
but that's fun.
What it
like,
is.
That's actually
it
fun,
is.
Right.
Maybe, I think so like, too. It's a puzzle. It's fun, and you have a framework, but I do think you're right. I think a lot of people in rehab, we want to defend why we spent all this money on this degree.
Oh,
and we want to defend that we are, in quotations, you know, I've heard like, oh, are you worried that people are going to think you're just a glorified personal trainer? And I'm like, first of all, you're insulting an entire extremely important industry that sees people in pain first, more frequently and for longer than I ever will.
Yeah.
And you're also just vastly misunderstanding what our industry is and how much we're so much more similar than what people think. Like, I don't worry about that at all. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I think that going to PT school really improved my ability to critically think. It gave me some fantastic baseline like anatomy knowledge. It helped me like get passionate around another group of people who are also just as passionate about what I am. Like, I don't really care what people think I am. It doesn't bother me because I know I can help the person in front of me. Like, I just think it's definitely an ego thing of like, we need to defend why we're different. We need to defend that we have a doctorate. Like, I don't care.
Like, I mean, at some level, it's like they just decided to give us a doctorate at 2020 in 20 in 2000 or whatever it
they
was.
could charge us more. That's
Yeah,
it.
it's like literally. So what can we do to up the it's and it's not that I don't value being considered a doctor. Like, I think
Correct.
I do appreciate that. And with certain people, it goes a long way. There's
Yeah.
At crazy doctors, right? There's crazy people
For
out
sure.
there.
For sure.
So, but you're 100% right insofar as like it's just critical thinking. It gave me so many access to like, oh, this person had back surgery and they're back in the hospital for another back surgery. So maybe this is not what we are proposing it to be. Or, hey,
Right.
that person, their back pain went away because when they started biking regularly. So maybe it's
Yeah.
not that they need to do something like super specific for their back pain, but they just need to get moving and find ways that don't hurt and to like
Yeah.
just break the cycle of
Yeah.
everything hurts, right?
And if having some extra education gives us the confidence to know that we're safely doing that, it was worth it to me. Like, that's what I think a little bit more of this degree is that you get that extra added confidence of I'm ruling out something that's dangerous. I'm ruling out something that I need to refer out for because now it's out of my hands. And I think that confidence is important to me. And I like that aspect of it. So when people ask, like, is it worth it to go to PT school? If maybe they're like a really excellent coach, I ask them those questions. Like, what will this degree give you that being a coach will not? If that's important to you, hell yeah, do it. If you feel like you can achieve that on your own already, maybe it's not necessary, but I don't think it wasn't worth it. I don't think it's stupid.
Just
Like,
don't
and
go to
I,
the, don't go, don't pay $300,000, people. Like, go find
right.
the affordable option that has good general ratings, right? Because
Right.
those
Right.
places.
Exactly.
And I do think that is one issue just to like over the overarching industry. It's like, do we need more physical therapists? I think we need to better learn to utilize our skills and get like some of that things. And I also think like, yeah, know why you're doing this. It's kind of like any degree you would go get, like, and it's hard because there's a lot of PTs that are really frustrated that they are going to be quote unquote in debt for a long time because of their education. But, and that's not really the point of this discussion, but like, I do think I would just say this, I am happy to chat with anybody about like going to PT school, and all I will do is ask you questions. Like, I'm not gonna tell you what to do. I'm just gonna ask you questions, right?
Agreed. Agreed.
Because that's just, you know, if I would have had that opportunity, I would hope that somebody would do the same, right?
Totally.
All right. So the kind of the last few big things I just wanted to touch on with you, and so you can go enjoy your Friday. But like, yeah, where do you see kind of the future? Well, so you just started a second gym, right? Or you guys are in a second gym?
Yeah, our second gym in August will be year three, actually.
Oh, really? So okay, I thought that was a little bit newer. It's my bad. So I've not.
I mean, it is definitely. It still feels like a new beast in its own. But yeah, it's wild.
What have been the things in like the business realm that like, oof, you know, you either wish you were more prepared for, or that have been really big lessons, or what do you think in that realm?
That's a great question. I think, I think first and foremost, I'm just really grateful because all things considered, it being stressful and hard, it's like the things that make me realize we're on the right track is the people that we have. My business partner is phenomenal and we complement each other so well. Like, he's so good at all of the things that I am not good at. And he's taught me so much and elevated me to be better in scenarios that maybe would make me uncomfortable before, or it's just like not my natural ability. And I hope to think that I do that for him too. And the people that we've have on our team, like the family that we've created, I think that stuff is what makes this feel less daunting. And that's the stuff where it's worth taking a lot of time to find the right people. I think before, maybe if we were growing and busy. I might have rushed processes of like finding people to fill a need, where now I'm extremely calculated with the process of onboarding people, the process of even being sure that this person would be a good fit. And I tell people that, like, I give them basically an outline of like, this is what our interview process looks like. And it's long on purpose because we're a family and we're changing healthcare. If that's not for you, and if it's not the right fit, like, then we have to stop. So it's long on purpose. I vet for a long time and it's a process, but that is so incredibly worth it. And I would say, like, if you're looking to build something, that's where you have to start. I don't care how flashy your gym is. I don't care how affluent of an area you're putting your gym in so you can have all the high paying people. If you don't have truly a family that you want to be around every single day, and like, I hire somebody who, every time I hire somebody, I'm trying to hire somebody who's better than me, smarter than me, and can teach me things.
Yeah.
So like, if you don't have that in place, you're going to have a really hard time. So I think that's like the biggest, it's a positive takeaway, because I think we've done a really good job of it. And that's what helps me feel like I'm not going to explode at any given moment, even though I'm tired and stressed, but it doesn't feel that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's you stress. It's quote unquote
yeah.
positive stress, right? It's stress that you like are, well, I mean, and it's so crazy because, you know, humans are kind of governed by like, we want these short, fast things that seem. I had a Brad Stolberg on this podcast a couple weeks ago. He's like, he wrote a few good books. Gosh, I think what's the one of them? The Practice of Groundedness. And he's like, you know, we're just in this time where superficiality is really, really pronounced, right? And, you know, even, you know, something short-term things can work out, but like people rush into decisions and we rush through processes and stuff, and it often just bites us in the butt, right?
For sure.
And I mean, it's like that could be in anything, marriage, like all sorts of
yeah.
stuff, right? So
yeah.
Just seeing that you have like a long vetting process, like it's good for both of the people involved, right? Like it's huge, because then it's like, yeah, you seem like a good fit and this is gonna work out, right? So I love that. I also think like, yeah, people try to set themselves up for the outcome without just embracing the process. Like, oh yeah, we'll put the gym in the affluent area, right? But then like, are you really helping the people you want to help there, or are you just helping the people you think are gonna pay you, right?
Right.
Because honestly, like, I'm not cheap, I'm not super expensive. But
yeah,
people that I get value my service, right? And I think
correct.
That's what you're trying to create, right?
Exactly.
Because I don't want to freaking cater to some guy who wants to tell me how to train him. I want
right,
him to appreciate
right.
my skill set, right? And some of that is me learning to work with anybody, right? But like,
yeah. But
I've
I think
seen
that's true.
Boutique, hey, come in, get stretched. Then you're going to do some bullshit training. And then you're
yeah.
gonna get stretched again, and then you're gonna get your hot towel and your smoothie, and we're gonna charge you an exorbitant amount of money, right?
I think it's true too. I think you have to have like a price point that's elevated in a way that shows what your expertise is, but it's accessible for people who value you. And I think that's like the biggest way of doing this. There's so many of those like business coaches out there where they're like, if you're not charging $300 a session, what are you doing? And I think depending on your business goals, like I want longevity, I want people, because I'm in it for the long game, and I want people who are in it for the long game with me. And if that means making a price point that, again, is elevated but accessible, hell yeah. I want people for life. I want people who are so invested and bought in, and they can see that this is something feasible that they can do. Most of my clients I've been working with since I started. And I think that is the most fun part about this type of kind of like hybrid rehab and training, where like, I want to be there for every up and down. I want to be there for, oh, I kind of tweaked my knee at jujitsu. How can we modify training today? Or, hey, can you kind of check it out and see what's going on? Like, I want to do that for people who see what we're doing is, again, like changing their life.
Yeah, I think that's an important shift. Because I started my business in April of 2021, and I have had clients now for almost 4 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like I don't want to attribute it all to like the fact that like I program appropriately and stuff, but like they don't get hurt.
Right.
But when they do,
Yeah.
You know, when they like, you know, people are going to get plantar fasciitis. People are going to have like weird knee stuff that comes up. They're going to
Yeah,
go.
totally.
Like, and so it's just, hey, like we literally hop on a call or we do a consult or they come in and like we just handle it and they, and you know, we screen and then it's like, okay, like that's worth it, right? That's super worth
Yeah.
it.
Well, and all you're doing is fortifying that person's relationship with their
Yes.
body and pain and understanding, like, we don't stop, we don't freak out,
Yeah.
we modify your training, and we rule out anything that would be dangerous for us to do. That's
Yeah.
it. That's life. That's going to happen over and over and over and over again. And nothing I'm doing is preventing that from happening. I'm just making you not freak out when it does and make
Yeah.
you know that it's normal and make you know that, like, I do this too in my training. I do this
Oh, yeah.
all of the time for myself too.
Yeah. And I have mild moments of me ruminating or perseverating on that I screwed myself up and but I calm
Oh,
myself down.
for sure.
My wife's a PT and I'm like, do you think I did something? She's like, you go too hard all the time. Just chill out.
Yeah.
So
No, the amount of, I mean, I joke about this with my clients too, because I want them to very much understand that the, like, hyper nervous response to
oh, yeah.
pain is human
Yeah.
and normal and okay. And I teach this stuff every single day and talk about it and live and breathe it. And then when it happens to me, I am like thinking the worst case scenario too.
Yeah.
Or I have to take maybe like easier in my training. And yeah, my fiance is a strength and conditioning coach. So he's in the industry too. And I'll be like, does my arm look atrophied? And he's like, what is wrong with you? Like, no, it's been 2 days that you've had to lower your volume. Like, but
Yeah.
it's, we feel this way too. Like, I think that's such an important lesson for our clients.
Yeah. So, okay, my last two questions. One of them is who are your influences? But before that, how was the training session with Alec Blennis? I did not watch like like come on, dude, do you need to make a YouTube channel where that all people are gonna flock to it? But like I do like it. I do like that he's like training with some cool people and stuff and but like how was that? Was it like a kick in the did he like challenge you in any way or was it just seeing him
Oh
or
yeah.
like
No,
how
it
did
was
it
so
feel?
much fun. So Alec has been my coach for over 2 years.
Oh, has he? I
So,
didn't know that. I didn't know that.
yeah, so we've worked together for a while. He's fantastic and obviously developed a friendship and a really good relationship over that time. So I was super excited when he wanted to come and train. Yeah, it was super hard. Like, we were just
So, but
basically
that it's kind of nice to know that because then it wasn't like him just being a giant dick. Like he kind of knows what you're capable of, and like you know, so
Yes,
it's but
yes.
still, yeah, I got it now.
So, no, it was super hard, but it was definitely like we talked about it beforehand, and I picked the stuff that I'm strongest at. I like
Yeah.
anything shoulders and overhead and anything pretty hip dominant for training. So, my goal with that session was basically like, if he was doing reverse lunging, I'm doing that same weight, but I'm doing it Hatfield, but I'm still moving like 335 or whatever stupid stuff we were doing. And no, it was super hard. I for sure, I was quite depleted after because it was like 4 hours. And I'm training right now. I mean, I'm always training pretty intensely, but I have some races coming up, so my running volume is high, all that good stuff. It was super hard, but it was a blast. We had so much fun. He's just a very critical thinker too, and we love to just like talk shop and talk about the industry. But I tried to go for a jog, like, so we trained together on Friday. I think it was like that next Saturday or Monday. I was just doing like one of my shakeout runs, and my glutes were so sore that I could feel like I was basically wanting to like high knees everything and just not use any hip extension, and my quads were talking to me. It was very obvious that my body was like, can you just not, like, you just trained for
Yeah.
4 hours.
Yeah.
But it was a blast. We had a lot of fun.
That's awesome. No, super cool. I did maybe I like maybe I'd seen that, but it makes it's cool now. It also gives it a little bit of context. So, but yeah, it look
Yeah, no, he's
like
picking people who are well trained and like want to push themselves, and then you're picking stuff based on things that you like to do together.
Yeah.
If anything, actually, sometimes it's people who are maybe doing something quite different than what he's doing, and Alec is trying it.
Yeah.
So, no, we had a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. He was nice enough. He came on this podcast again. I'll try that. He'll probably do it again. He's a super nice guy. I think he's in he from Minnesota. I think he's from Minnesota.
He's from Atlanta, but he's in
He
Minnesota.
lives
But
in
yeah,
Minnesota.
he's extremely nice. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like super nice guy. So
Yeah.
which like that like the fitness industry is super weird and then but like most of the people I gravitate to are very kind, like people who are pretty darn real. Well, I think that's also
Yeah.
being in the fitness space. Like you kind of see like who's bullshit and
Yeah.
who is an authentic human being. But
For
yeah.
sure. Yeah.
Let's wrap it up with like who or what are your influences and like, you know, why?
Okay, that's a good question. When it comes to like what, I would just
Yeah, it can be
say,
anything.
yeah, I would say my biggest influence in everything that I'm doing at Old Bull or education or anything is I want to lower like the threat of people providing this type of care and people in the same vein, also people who come to see me and work with me. I want to lower the threat of like feeling like a badass in your training. As I mentioned before, like we have an extreme luxury that we like this and that we went to school for this and understand our bodies really well. I want to make everybody feel like they have access to that. And that's why I try really hard to make it fun. And like I'm goofy and I'm weird and I don't take myself seriously. And I want to show that in my sessions with people, when I'm teaching people, like I'm not the expert in the room. I'm learning from everybody. And I'm just a normal person who like wants to just shout from the rooftops how important this stuff is. I think we're living in an age of people wanting to be gurus and be like the person who knows everything about this topic. And I just want to lower that like barrier for people, especially new clinicians, new coaches, anybody. Like, I just want this to be a much more positive environment. We were talking about how it's like kind of trendy to just like shit on what everybody else is doing. And while there's plenty of things that I'm like, yeah, I would not do that, I never want to make somebody feel stupid or like what they're doing is wrong or bad. I want it to be a much more like positive landscape. So that's what kind of drives everything that I do. It might sound kind of cheesy, but that's how I feel. So that's like my motivator for anything that I put out there, anything that I teach, anything that I work on with a client. In terms of like who are my influences or I mean, there's so many people that I don't even think I could ever possibly name them. I really think like the easiest answer to that is my team. Again, that probably sounds so cheesy, but it really is true. Like, I can't believe, you know, I forget how bad it is out there because of what I see every day in my clinics. Like just today, I was down in our second location, hanging out and doing some stuff down there, and like we are all just, we have so much fun and everybody is so smart and so silly and so open-minded and so communicative. And like, that's what I think healthcare should be. I think
Yeah.
it's can be very like sterile and rigid and this feeling of like, well, I'm the provider and I'm smarter than you, so this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I hate that. So I definitely would say like every single person at Old Bull is my biggest influence.
Yeah. No, that's a great answer. I think yeah, I think having well the first the decrease in threat mentality, right? Like the making things accessible and yeah, like allowing people to be on their own journey, I think is huge, right? And I think even I still struggle with like, well, like I had a guy who was he's actually he was a buddy's dad, and he signed up with me a few years back, and I told the story to somebody else not that long ago, and he's like, you know, it'd give him like 3 sets of 8 to 12 type of thing, right? And he'd be like, you know, he'd do 2 sets of 12, and he'd be like, I'm done. And but he would put in there, he's like, I only did 2 sets because I have free will. And I'm like, all right. And that's like part of it is that you have to allow people to have the space. And I think
Yeah.
the level of perfectionism and rigidity and like this is the path. Even like I really think specialization is important, but specialization without breadth is like just putting yourself into a silo, right? And I think that's one of the big things that people struggle with in our industry is like trying to specialize in something before they know how to interact with like a human being, right?
Yes.
I think that can be problematic. I also think it leads people to go down like rabbit holes of, you know, things that don't help them, right? And then, yeah, I think it's
Yeah.
also it's really cool that you appreciate the people around you and just like learn from them all the time and just sit back and realize like leadership is not having all the answers. Leadership is like allowing the people around you to like you're just I don't even yeah I think you're just facilitating, right? And like
I was gonna say, it feels more like facilitating
yeah
an environment for like everybody to be a leader and everybody to have
yes
expertise and things to offer. Yeah, I think that's super important. And I feel lucky. Like it's just fun. That's what I want. Just I want it to be fun.
Yeah, fun is a very high core value of some of
Yeah.
mine too. So no, Katie, this was dope. I appreciate you coming on. Where can
Thanks
people
for having
find
me.
you? Both in person, virtual, where are you at?
In person, Miami, Florida, come visit. It's about to get really hot here, so maybe not then, but Miami, Florida is where both of our gyms are at. Instagram's a great place to find us. Old Bull Athletics is our Instagram page, and then mine is just KT and my last name, Dabrowski. We love people to come and hang and shadow and learn. We're also always looking for good people. So I kind of have like a rolling application going all of the time. If you like what we're doing and you think you're a good fit, send it my way. But yeah, those are the places to find me.
Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Peace.
Peace.